Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Bridges to Peace. The Pope speaks to ambassadors of predominantly Islamic nations and calls for renewed vigor in dialogue between Muslims and Christians and reciprocal respect of religious rights. Ethical tourism. Planning your holiday doesn't necessarily mean just looking for sand-swept beaches or tropical getaways. Those are the stories coming up over the next half hour. I'm your host today, Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Bridges to overcome misunderstanding, spanning divides that will overcome conflict and lead to peace. Well, with that idea in mind, Pope Benedict on Monday greeted more than 20 ambassadors accredited to the Holy See from majority Islamic countries, as well as leading members of the Muslim community here in Italy. The Pope invited the ambassadors to his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, outside Rome, in response to confusion over an academic lecture he gave 2 weeks ago in Regensburg, Germany. In public appearances since then, the Pope on various occasions had expressed deep dismay over Muslim reaction to the lecture and reassured them his use of a quote from a medieval emperor in that speech did not reflect his own personal views about Islam. At Castel Gandolfo, the Pope clearly thought the time had come to look ahead to where relations between Christians and Muslims go from here. Susie Hodges caught up with Iraqi ambassador to the Holy See, Albert Yelder, after the meeting in Castel Gandolfo. He praised the Pope's call for renewed dialogue between Muslims and Christians.
I think the Holy Father was greeted very well by the all representatives, and I think his speech, which was delivered in French language but translated into so many languages, including Arabic and English, went well, and I think the Holy Father emphasized once again on the issue of his profound respect to Islam as a religion and to Muslims around the world. So this is very important. And he also emphasized starting building on the dialogue, the genuine and true dialogue between all religions, including Muslims, as well as building bridges. So building bridges mean to continue with these dialogue initiatives. And I think that will be very important for the humanity, the whole human community, as well as for the Catholic Christians and Christians worldwide, as well as Muslims and Arab world.
So is it generally felt now that this whole misunderstanding can be put behind us?
I think it's time. This is several times that His Holiness stated very clearly that his profound respect to Islam, and especially in this, the meeting was conducted in this holy month of Ramadan, and he greeted the Muslims in this holy month of fasting, and he wished them well. And so I think we need to move forward. This is the most important issue, to move forward in order to build bridges. Obviously, many Muslims in the Islamic world and the Arab world and Europe were offended by the remarks, and they have stated their anger, they expressed their anger openly. And I think they have all the right to express their anger. And I think now is the time, following this meeting with the head of the Muslim world, head of missions, as well as representative of the Muslim communities, I think we need to put all these remarks behind us and move forward towards genuine, true dialogue, interreligious and intercultural dialogue, in order to, you know, to be able to peacefully coexist as nations, as human beings together.
In his speech to the diplomats and Italian Muslims at Castel Gandolfo, the Pope reiterated what he called his profound respect for Muslim believers. He recalled the words of the Second Vatican Council, which he described as the Catholic Church's Magna Carta of Muslim-Christian dialogue. Here, the Pope quoted that declaration laid out in Nostra Aetate.
L'Église regarde aussi avec estime les musulmans.
The Church looks upon Muslims with respect. They worship the one God, living and subsistent, merciful and almighty, creator of heaven and earth, who has spoken to humanity and to whose decrees, even the hidden ones, they seek to submit themselves wholeheartedly, just as Abraham, to whom the Islamic faith readily relates itself, submitted to God.
Comme s'est soumis à Dieu Abraham, à qui la foi islamique se réfère volontiers.
Placing himself firmly within that perspective, the Pope went on to say that since the very beginning of his pontificate, he has expressed his desire to build bridges of friendship with people of all religions, with particular appreciation for dialogue between Muslims and Christians.
Comme j'ai souligné à Cologne l'an dernier,
as I underlined at Cologne last year, interreligious and intercultural dialogue between Christians and Muslims cannot be reduced to an optional extra. It is, in fact, a vital necessity on which, in large measure, our future depends. In a world marked by relativism and too often excluding the transcendence and universality of reason, we are in great need of an authentic dialogue between religions and between cultures, capable of assisting us in a spirit of fruitful cooperation to overcome all the tensions together. Continuing then the work undertaken by my predecessor, Pope John Paul II, I sincerely pray that the relations of trust which have developed between Christians and Muslims over several years will not only continue, but will develop further in a spirit of sincere and respectful dialogue, based on ever more authentic reciprocal knowledge, which, with joy, recognizes the religious values that we have in common, and with loyalty respects the differences.
Pope Benedict went on to say, interreligious and intercultural dialogue are necessary for building together a world of peace and fraternity, desired, he said, by all people of goodwill. And it is up to religious leaders, and yes, even to political leaders, to show they value and respect religion, even if that religion is not their own.
In this area, our contemporaries expect from us an eloquent witness to show all people the value of the religious dimension of life. Likewise, faithful to the teachings of their own religious traditions, Christians and Muslims must learn to work together, as indeed they already do in many common undertakings, in order to guard against all forms of intolerance and to oppose all manifestations of violence. As for us, religious authorities and political leaders, we must guide and encourage them in this direction.
Again, the Pope referred to the Vatican II Declaration Nostra Aetate, saying that though considerable disagreements and enmity may have risen between Christians and Muslims throughout the centuries, people of both faiths should go beyond the past and work for a future of peace through respectful dialogue.
Le Saint Concile les exhorte tous.
The Council urges all parties that, forgetting past things, they train themselves towards sincere mutual understanding and together maintain and promote social justice and moral values, as well as peace and freedom for all people. The lessons of the past must therefore help us to seek paths of reconciliation in order to live with respect for the identity and freedom of each individual, with a view to fruitful cooperation in the service of all humanity. As Pope John Paul II said in his memorable speech to young people at Casablanca in Morocco, respect and dialogue require reciprocity in all spheres, especially in that which concerns basic freedoms, more particularly religious freedom. They favor peace and agreement between peoples.
Il favorise la paix et l'entente entre les peuples.
So, reiterating Pope John Paul II's call for reciprocal respect for basic and religious freedoms, Pope Benedict made it clear that he would, like his predecessor, continue to dedicate his energy to promoting understanding between faiths. And going further, he said, it is imperative that the Muslim-Christian dialogue be given new life in response to these troubled times.
Je suis profondément convaincu que dans la situation que connaît le monde aujourd'hui.
Dear friends, I am profoundly convinced that in the current world situation it is imperative that Christians and Muslims engage with one another in order to address the numerous challenges that present themselves to humanity, especially those concerning the defense and promotion of the dignity of the human person and of the rights ensuing from that dignity. When threats mount up against people and against peace, by recognizing the central character of the human person and by working with perseverance to see that human life is always respected, Christians and Muslims manifest their obedience to the Creator, who wishes all people to live in the dignity that He has bestowed upon them.
Imam Yahya Pallavicini, a leading member of the Italian Islamic community, was present for the Pope's speech. He called it an interesting opportunity to approach Christian-Muslim dialogue from a new perspective.
The speech of the Pope was a very interesting speech and gave probably the opportunity to us and through us to the Muslim world to witness a new orientation of interfaith dialogue. And this new orientation is probably the consequence of a peculiar preparation of the Pope, as he has probably much more interest in in-depth confrontation according to a philosophical, theological point of view, which could actually, through the knowledge of religious doctrines, help qualified intellectual Muslims, Christians, and Jews to give new orientations, not only in interfaith dialogue, but also to answer to the challenges of the contemporary society.
Dominican Father Jean-Jacques Perrenet lives and works among Muslims in Cairo, Egypt. For him and for countless other Christians like him, dialogue with these sons of Abraham comes naturally, as well it should, he says, for all of us.
I find that very important in the hard times we are going through. As we have seen the last weeks, again, you have tensions between Christians and Muslim world and lots of fear on both sides. And we need people of reconciliation. We need people who are able to overcome the mutual fear we have. Let us be conscious of the heaviness of the past.
What do you mean by heaviness?
You know, we had the Crusades, we had all these things, you know, the Muslims invading other countries, coming to Vienna, all the tensions, violence. Let us be conscious of that, and let us try to heal the wounded memory of people and countries and on human groups, you know. There's a lot to do in the area of healing the memory. But I think we have to dare to address this difficult issue as well, you know. Let us sit together, let us do things together, and let us, you know, after the discussion of the Pope speech in Regensburg, I got a beautiful letter from a Muslim friend who is a scholar at El Azhar University.
In Cairo?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's a friend of mine, and he told me, I'm sorry, we have to face this situation, but my dear, don't worry, I know you are my friend, I will never doubt our brotherhood, for me it is stronger than all this. For me this is a sign that even if it's difficult, even you know the prejudices are still there, we can build really. This man is a traditional Muslim. His father is an imam, I mean, but we can build, you know, real friendships and relationships together.
But how do you do that?
Just being there. Just being there. Often people tell us, oh, are you not afraid? We don't have to be afraid. Maybe there are some risks sometimes, but, you know, this is the gospel as well, you know. We have to share life with people. And there is a lot of joy, you know, just to be there with people, to enjoy the their happiness, to suffer when they are sad, you know, just to be with them. And then you enter in a better knowledge, and you see that in their religion they have good things, and they see that in our religion we have good things as well. For example, now we are entering Ramadan, and in the streets of Cairo you will see thousands, hundreds of tables, just when they break the fast, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Maidan al-Rahman, which means tables of mercy. And it's just a sign of sharing. So this is beautiful. I would say we could find that in the gospel, you know. Share what you have with the poor.
And that was Dominican Father Jean-Jacques Perenet from Cairo, Egypt. Earlier, you also heard Imam Yahya Pallavicini, a leading member of the Italian Islamic community, and also the Iraqi ambassador to the Holy See, Albert Yelder. After a hard year of work, most of us can't wait to get off on a long-awaited and surely well-deserved vacation. But when you're sunbathing on a tropical beach or wining and dining under the stars, the last thing you think about is how your holiday may be affecting the local population. Well, the Catholic Church traditionally sets aside September 27th every year to raise awareness about the positive and the negative effects of tourism on local populations. The Pope has drafted a special message for this Wednesday's World Tourism Day, which we'll be bringing to you then. But in a statement for last year's events, Pope Benedict XVI said, "Tourism should be accompanied by respect for the local people and culture. It should also help promote dialogue and understanding between peoples." What most of us don't think about on holiday is how our vacation may be contributing to or actually causing poverty in the places we're visiting. Communities in developing nations often find that tourism is imposed on them by governments, foreign developers, and tourism businesses without any consideration for the benefit of the local people. But some lobby groups are campaigning to raise awareness about the negative impacts of tourism. Susie Hodges tells us how.
How can tourism be improved so that the local community benefits from the presence of holidaymakers to their area? That's the aim of Tourism Concern, an association that is campaigning for fair and ethically traded tourism. It says the trend in tourism is towards greater control by multinationals, more all-inclusive tourism, which excludes local people and businesses, and greater numbers. Patricia Barnett is Director of Tourism Concern, and she welcomes Pope Benedict's call for greater respect and solidarity for local people in tourist areas.
I feel that papal messages very often on World Tourism Day are stunningly impressive with their real respect for the needs of local people. And I think we as tourists, when we go on holiday, can do lots and lots of things which enable local people to feel pleased that we're there and to benefit from our presence. So, for example, only too often bargaining becomes a matter of sort of life and death for us as tourists, as we haggle over a euro which might perhaps provide a family with a meal for a day, and that euro might be part of the cost we want to pay for some beautiful craft or artwork that we want to buy that is already very cheap. We haggle over taxi fares. We fight over tiny amounts which are inconsequential to us. We have a feeling that local people are trying to rip us off, they're trying to cheat us, which is often really, really not true. They're just wanting a fair price. So I think you respect locals. You might want to bargain, but you do it with respect. That's a really good first start. A second thing is how we dress. You know, we often go to countries where local women would never allow themselves to be seen semi-naked in public. And often it only takes a sarong or a wrap to put around ourselves when we leave the beach to make us quite respectable and respectful of local wishes.
You say that tourism often causes or exacerbates poverty. In what areas and in what ways has this happened?
Regrettably, when we travel abroad from Europe, especially to third world countries and third world destinations, which are increasingly becoming more available to us, we buy our ticket and the package for our holiday in the country that we're living in. And very, very often, that money stays with that country, and only too often, the airline is owned by that country. So if I'm coming from the UK, where Tourism Concern is based, up to 90% of the package money that I'm buying for my holiday will stay here, and perhaps only 10% will arrive in the destination.
So what are the main negative impacts of tourism on local communities?
The negative impacts of tourism are sort of what's known as the triple bottom line. They're environmental, they're economic, and they're social. So very often when we go on holiday, we take our own cultures with us. And we get quite upset if we're booking into a hotel and the hotel doesn't respond to our needs. So, for example, if we're Dutch, we might go to a hotel and very much expect to be eating pork and red cabbage and potatoes in a country that is Islamic, that doesn't grow potatoes and doesn't know what red cabbage is. But we're going to get them because that food will be imported in. That's part of why people are maintained in poverty. So people are told that they'll get wealthy from tourism, but very often, as many of us have experienced, when we go to a particularly poor country where mass tourism is prevalent, people harass us for a response to their needs for our money. So we're asked if we need guides and if we need taxes, and very often, of course, we see prostitution quite blatantly all around us. So people don't access the money, their cultures are impacted upon, they don't get the funding, and very often their environments are despoiled horribly by developments which, for example, aren't tied into sewage and waste disposal.
Do you think that the public at large has too little awareness of these negative impacts?
I think people are becoming increasingly aware. When Tourism Concern started 15 years ago, we were talking into a complete vacuum. But I think many, many people now are very conscious of the poverty of the countries that they're visiting and our relative wealth. The trouble is about what do you do about it? How do you manage that? How can you have a good, relaxing, enjoyable holiday with that consciousness in mind? So, yes, I think people are much more aware than they were.
But how can people then, choose a holiday on the basis of concerns like those you're highlighting? How can they sort of ensure that the local community benefits from their presence as tourists?
There are various ways. Certainly you can choose to go on a holiday, and we've got a whole guidebook on it, a holiday where you can stay with local communities or where local communities are involved with a commercial operator so that they genuinely get benefit from our holidays, because tourism can be a wonderful development tool to get people out of poverty. And the second thing is, if you don't want that sort of a holiday, which is often can be quite luxurious as well as very basic, all sorts of holidays, you can stay with local communities all over the world. We've got at least 60 countries where local people have taken control over their product, so to speak. But you can also ask your tour operator very basic questions like, where is the water coming from that I'm using in my hotel shower and in my hotel swimming pool? Is it coming from local supplies? Is there some equity somehow or other in the water? Is the food being bought locally or is it being imported? You can ask some basic questions.
Bonnet says many large tourist operators are still more concerned about their commercial interests than the provision of ethical tourism.
We've been trying to persuade the largest tour operators in Europe that they've really got to change practice. The tourism industry is running years behind other industries like extractive industries and production industries. This is a service industry, running years behind other industries in relation to their social responsibilities. And there is a shift. I'm delighted to say I think Tourism Concern has worked really, really hard. And there is a slight shift by some of the operators at the top, but the majority know they have no interest and resent any implication that they should change their way they work and their purchasing procedures. No, they don't like Tourism Concern's activities too much.
Can you give us a concrete example of how tourism can support local people, culture, environment and economies, some up-and-running project?
Well, in large-scale tour operations, not very many. In small-scale tour operators, the small and medium, yes, I can. I can tell you that the small and medium operators, who often have a passionate love affair with the destinations that they visit, really want to make sure that local people benefit from tourism. So as much as possible, the best operators will use local guides. They will stay in locally owned hotels. They will ensure that their guests are eating food that's bought from local suppliers. And this is a real start in what we call supply chain, in supply chain management. We're also very interested at Tourism Concern in not just how many people are employed by tourism, but we want to ensure that the people employed in tourism are paid a fair wage. And some operators are prepared to work with us and to do an audit, what we call an audit, of the workers in the hotels to make sure that everybody is getting a fair wage and are having fair working conditions, which is normally not the case. So there is change with the small and medium-sized operators. They want to keep the locals happy as well as their customers. When we go on holiday, we often behave differently than we might do at home. We want to be different. We want to separate ourselves away from our normal everyday lives. It's part of the reason why we go on holiday. And then we behave differently sometimes and put our ethics behind us. And that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate because we just want to drop everything. It's a psychological need we have.
And our thanks there to Patricia Barnett, director of the UK-based Tourism Concern. She was speaking to my colleague, Susie Hodges. And for more information about social responsibility in tourism, log on to Tourism Concern's website. You'll find it on www.tourismconcern.org.uk. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.